Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Royal Grown Radio. I'm very excited about tonight's episode because talking with some large influences in my life and large influences on the culture and the community of the Emerald Triangle in Trinity County and Humboldt County, people that have been here for a very long time and doing a lot of really good things to bring our community together in a time that we really need to come back together and rejoin the community that kind of built the Emerald Triangle and the reputation of Humboldt and Humboldt cannabis and all of the things that we typically celebrate. So today we're joined by Lelania Dubois of the Humboldt Grace and Humboldt Grace Fire Recovery Project and Jeremy Brown, Board of Supervisors in Trinity County and longtime contributor to the community in Willow Creek and Trinity County. Thank you all for joining us today.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
No problem. One of the best things about Royal Grown Radio is that it's just a living conversation. We just kind of throw things out there and talk about it and get an opportunity to celebrate our community. So tell us a little bit about your roots in our community and how this project is coming to light, the Humboldt Grace Fire Recovery Project.
Well, I grew up in Burt Ranch. My family moved there when I was 7 years old, and it was really like cemented into us through trauma. My sister died 6 months when we moved into that area. We were all in a car accident, and she died in the Trinity River. And we had come from a very traumatic experience to begin with.
Yeah.
And moved into Burt Ranch. And when she died, the community just like gathered around us. And because of our previous experience, it was more extractive from us. And this experience was, you know, my mom broke her back in that accident. And when we went to school, my teachers would brush my hair out. Wow. And it was just incredible, and it became this really healing experience for me as a young child, and it just kind of really embedded us into the community. And so I have a spinal cord injury and health issues, and when these fires happened in Trinity County and in Willow Creek, I felt very emotionally attached to that. And after being in this whole legalization process, which is so much divisiveness, watching these kids, I've been at births to a lot of these folks that were rising up against these fires because my mom was a midwife. I've seen them get married. I've seen them go through all these things. And watching these people that inspired me to be who I am as a community builder do exactly what I'm preaching about was just like so incredible for me and so healing for me. And I wanted to like figure out a way to help. And I was working on a project that involved an auction, and I'd been doing all this building of processes and already had this system in place. And I went, when my mom died, the community held an auction and it paid for all her funeral services. And I was like, let's do that. And with my contacts outside of here and inside of here, we can do something really special. And so now we have this online auction that's happening right now that has all these beautiful projects or products from local artists to hotel stays locally to a 3-day all-inclusive vacation at a cannabis resort in Jamaica to, website design, just all sorts of really beautiful things, all the way up to a group of hemp activists in Australia saw our project, and they created an NFT for it that they're auctioning off. There's this really beautiful, because of what they went through with the fires. So they really connected with that, and they made this really beautiful NFT of like the fires and the river and then all these hearts coming in. And it's really beautiful. And what it's doing is it's really bringing all our communities together on doing service to each other and taking us back to where we were when this industry was really built back in the 70s and on community, not on how much can I get, but what can we build from what we have.
It's amazing how people and communities that go through significant traumas like fires, like your family went through, find themselves so eager to contribute to other people when they go through traumas because they've had that experience and they want to come together and help elevate the people that are struggling the way they have in the past and, you know, kind of paying forward the things that were paid forward to them through those traumas. That's one of the beauties of kind of the Humboldt County, Northern California movement going all the way back to the 70s when people were coming together from the traumas of camp and, you know, being assailed for wanting to have plant medicine. So that's pretty amazing that that's the roots and it's reached all the way to Australia to get this project for rebuilding the communities out around Willow Creek. And, you know, Jeremy, you're in Trinity County, like it swept mostly across Trinity County and up into Humboldt and it touched kind of the edge of Humboldt, but Trinity County, you guys really bore the brunt of a lot of the fires this year. Tell me about how that affected you and your role in the community.
I mean, the fires, the fire burned through the county for, I believe it was, started at the end of July, so all of August, all of September, and into the beginning of October until the rains pretty much put it out. So it was over 200,000 acres that burned in accumulation, and you know, from it was the first time I'd been in a fire in my position as a supervisor, and so learning about the process that it takes to get the resources that the local resources don't have into the county and into the communities, while there's an active fire moving. It's really challenging because it's this moving target and you have all these variables. And once they exceed the capacity for local resources like your volunteer fire departments, and since Trinity County, you know, all we have is the Weaverville Fire Department and the volunteer fire department. So Downriver, Hawkins Bar, and Sawyer, and then Willow Creek, which is in Humboldt County.
Those are all volunteers, right?
Those are your first responders, are the volunteers. And then you have your Forest Service stations, and those usually have, you know, of one or two fire trucks and a team of maybe 4 to 6, 8 people that are usually positioned there year-round, I believe. And so when a fire exceeds a certain capacity, they request outside resources. And from the moment you make those requests until those resources are actually boots on the ground in the county, you know, that might be, 2 days, 3 days. It depends what other activities are going on in the rest of the state. And so with this year, with the Dixie Fire going on, let alone all the other fires across the state that weren't as substantial maybe at the time, so many resources were already allocated to that it takes a while to shift it. And so when you have those, you know, 3 or 4 days of transferring of resources, a lot can happen with the fires. So it makes these resource requests, you know, really hard to totally target for the exact needs. And I think that, you know, that is really challenging. And the people that have to make those decisions, I imagine their positions being very challenging too. You're trying to predict the weather and you're looking at the community densities where, you know, where are the most affected areas where, you know, you can't help everyone in those situations. And one of the things I realized was, you know, like everyone moved back into these areas, you know, to kind of be left alone. That was a lot of the basis of the Back to the Land movement, or veterans coming out of war, or people coming out to, you know, mine gold and ranch, all that, to get away from the cities and to get away from, you know, government control and oversight. And when these disasters come through, whether it's a fire or, you know, I don't know what our other disasters are, mostly
slides.
Fire.
Slides are pretty impactful.
Yeah. We do depend in a lot of ways on outside resources. So it makes it challenging, and there's definitely a divide of, you know, there's some people that are totally self-dependent where they're not going to count on Forest Service or CAL FIRE or whoever to come and protect them. They're going to stay there and defend their own place. There's a certain aspect of that. But there is also a shift that I think I've seen of people that thought, you know, I want to be left alone. I don't want to depend on government assistance. But now some of these events are very extreme. And whether it's climate change or forest management practices, whatever the reason is, the flames can move faster. And in a rural area, you don't have the communications of that of a urban area. And so if a power goes out because of a fire or a high winds event, you lose usually your phone unless you have backup power. And a lot of these areas don't have cell service. Or if you're satellite internet, you don't have power, then you don't have communications. And so you don't get a lot of the emergency alerts. So it makes it challenging for people to either one, evacuate and leave and be prepared that maybe your place will burn up, maybe it won't, and maybe there'll be resources there, maybe there won't be resources there, but you're losing that control out of your hands. And that's challenging for a lot of the demographic of Trinity County to relinquish that control of their property into the trust of an outside agency. You know, I think a lot of people would really trust the volunteer fire departments, but their capacity is so limited in these large scale events. And so, you know, seeing that coordination from the local volunteer fire department to the CAL FIRE and the U.S. Forest Service, and then Forest Service contracts out with other fire departments. So fire departments from Ventura County, Los Angeles County, they come up and pull resources from the cities and they apply them into these rural areas. And so that could be challenging for some of those personnel. They're not familiar with the mountainous terrain and the way the fire can move through that topography. And so, you know, there's a lot of challenges. And
one of the reasons I think you guys did so well, though, is because that those were challenges, but instead of the community going, oh my God, what are we going to do? And running in fear, they went, oh my God, what are we going to do? And they figured it out. So like a lot of people were intercommunicating. Some folks started a Facebook communications, which started all these other communications on Facebook. And so the community engaged with itself, with the Forest Service. It was everybody worked together. And one of the things that Jeremy and I were talking about earlier, as I was asking him, I was like, okay, so those folks that don't want the folks on their property, because I respect that. I mean, that's part of why we choose to live here, right? 100%. Is to have that like individuality and privacy. How can they be able to do that? And he was talking about how they need to have the right equipment. They need to have, you know, be engaged in the volunteer firefighter departments. And those resources haven't been, you know, for this industry, because this is a cannabis conversation, hasn't grown. Those resources haven't been resupplemented. And we need people to become volunteer firefighters in those communities.
And we need them to open up to the organizations that are there to help them in the community portion that is there in engineering to help
Absolutely.
Them. I think that's one of the biggest things we saw is it's difficult to mobilize a community to help when the fire's not in striking distance. It's not really a threat in your mind. And then the next day it's on your property. And how do you mobilize that quickly when you haven't had the volunteer fire department come and walk your property and say, hey, this is a major danger zone. Remove these ladder fuels. Oh, how many water tanks do you have that are just set for when we show up and need to pump water to fight this fire for you? And people don't often think about being prepared for those impacts in those ways. And, you know, I'm definitely in the group of never having experienced that. And this year when it was all happening and threatening Willow Creek and so many of our friends and neighbors, there was a situation where one community member was you know, frustrated with what was going on and how maybe the resources weren't going to where they thought they should fast enough, and made like kind of a call out to the community to come help, and people started mobilizing, and the powers out there, the Cal Fire, was like, whoa, no, you're calling people into extreme danger, and people were mobilizing because the community was reaching out for it, and it came from the best of intentions, and I think it honestly opened up a little better communication in the aftermath between, you know, at least the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors and, you know, Cal Fire and some of the cannabis community and more just removed community that was feeling like they were being left in the lurches and closed out of their properties, and, you know, because they were in evacuation zones, and that's a challenging place to be, and the desperation can be so strong, and people like me who really don't have any business being out in a firefight without proper training. I was, you know, loading up the truck. All right, you guys need help? What? I know how to run a chainsaw. Come on out. But that's not beneficial necessarily in those times. And so I'm glad to see a little bit more kind of mobilized effort for the recovery in a way that benefits the community and can be a little slower and more relaxed and more organized to benefit everyone equally and more deeply.
You know what, Michael? I think that as the years have progressed, one of the things my mom loved, she used to say this all the time, oh, I live in a community that we don't build fences. And we started building fences. And what these communities just showed us is the value of having a handshake over that fence. How important that is to survive and build a healthy community. You know, Jeremy mentioned Burnt Ranch is an incredibly unique geographical entity. I mean, it's very severe in all of that. And I believe that one of the reasons that Burnt Ranch survived so well is because everybody lives there knows what the F is up. They know how to take care of their land. They know, and they work together, and they know each other, because that community is so rugged. You get shut out a lot. You know, when I was a kid, we'd be shut out for months because of slides out there. And so you're really interdependent on each other. And with COVID, we're learning how interdependent we are on each other everywhere. And I think these communities are a testament to that, and a example for the rest of us in this cannabis industry, because we've become so divisive as to what created us and will keep us going.
I love that you kind of point that out about Burnt Ranch, because so many people that tune in and listen to this at home aren't familiar with Humboldt County and Trinity County and necessarily the degree of rugged and ruralness. But Burnt Ranch, to get there, even from Humboldt, you're going along sheer cliffs up and down on either side of you along the highway, on a two-lane highway. That's quite intimidating if you've never been on it, or even if you've been on it a bunch of times, but you're intimidated by that sort of thing. And coming in the other way, it's nearly just as extreme, you know, straight down to the Trinity River and straight up to the ridgetops of the mountains. And it's a very isolated kind of bowl up above the Trinity River.
Well, and what's unique too is, you know, anyone who's gone rafting down the river, you're familiar with the afternoon winds. Yes. And so really that's one of the biggest components and variables with fire is the wind. And so when you have these winds coming up the Trinity drainage in the afternoon, that's what starts making these fires really jump. And that's what happened with Big Flat and Big Bar. And that's where our structures were lost for the Monument Fire. I think we lost, was it 15 homes, 30 structures total. And so the afternoon winds push traditionally always to the east. So when this fire started, I believe it was to the west of Del Loma up in the mountains, but to the east of Burnt Ranch. So a lot of people on Burnt Ranch weren't too worried as far as preparations go, because traditionally the fires go the other direction.
Right.
And it wasn't large at its when it started, you know.
And the rivers, but it's got to jump the river to get to Burnt Ranch, too, usually.
Yeah, but this one, it tumbled down the hill. because at night usually the wind goes down the hill. And so, you know, the Monument Fire was a lightning fire along with, you know, 4,000 other, I think, lightning strikes in that same dry storm that occurred. And so there, you know, whether or not there were or weren't resources or whatever the facts are, that it wasn't put out. It was allowed, or it was, yeah, it grew for a long period of time. And, you know, another misleading thing that I kind of learned about is, well, when the fires are getting reported on and they talk about the acres of the fire, there is a difference of the total acres burned and then the actual burning front of these fires.
Because, that's important.
You know, the fuels and the materials burn up usually within a matter of hours. So what you really have is a certain width of a line of fire that goes for a certain length of an area. And this line of fire burns through kind of like a wave in an ocean. And once it goes through, a few hours later, the rest is all burned. It's in the black. It's blacked out. And so it moves through. And that front line is kind of where you watch. When the winds get big, you know, it can throw the sparks and materials 2 miles in advance. And because the woods are typically unmanaged, overgrown, there's lots of forest stuff. When those sparks land in the ground, those can all of a sudden turn into just as big of a front of a fire. And so when you're fighting this front over here, and then the winds pick up, boom, all of a sudden 2 miles later, there's another one. And so it does make it really challenging on the safety of how do you utilize personnel. The steep topography, it makes it challenging for aerial assistance. And
I was watching Todd and those guys. So in Burnt Ranch, the Burnt Ranch Gorge is one of the most dangerous rivers in the United States. It's very intense and steep. And then the new river comes in, and then there's this mountain, Ironside Mountain, that's like this, right? And I was watching Todd, who's someone that I literally went to grade school on the bus with in Burnt Ranch, climbing those mountains with those guys up there, trying to stop the river or the fire out like it was heading towards Denny. And it was just like, wow, these guys are like heroes. Like, this is like stuff you see in movies. These are guys that, like, this is not what they do for a living at all. And they were literally climbing these cliffs to protect their community. It was just, it was really, I mean, it's a horrible event, but the response that everyone had was just so beautiful. I mean, there literally was, there's days that like tears were streaming down my face. Not because I was afraid for any of you guys, because I knew you all could handle it, but watching everybody, watching Duncan, watching you, watching Todd, watching Basha, it was just like, wow, this is why I fight for us. It's why I love us so much. And it just reignited me. So thank you for that.
It's so amazing to have such a unique and connected group of people in such a rural place. And the thing that a lot of people don't realize about Northern California, we're talking about these rivers and we're down here on the coast where it's a rainforest, but up where these fires were up in your communities, it's high desert and it is immensely dry. And when those, you know, fires are leaping out in front, like it creates incredibly dangerous realities. I encourage people to go home and like take a look on Google, get some topo maps and like take a real hard look at some of the territory that was affected by the fires and the communities that were affected and look at how remote and removed they are, but recognize that each of these tiny little communities interconnects in a really important way. In community-wise, you were mentioning Del Loma and, you know, Denny. And, you know, Denny is like this fabled kind of place that they were like fighting back the government helicopters in the 80s, you know, shooting down helicopters and stuff, or so the stories go.
Yeah, that's what they tell us.
That's the story. And, you know, like these are deep-rooted communities that have been cultivating each other for 50, 70 years.
The first seeds sold in High Time, the story goes, were sold out of Denny.
That does not surprise me. There's an amazing campground up there that I encourage everyone to take the time to get to at least once in their life, right up towards the headwaters right of the New River.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful spot.
Very special place. So we've had these fires. You've got community response. You've got, you know, local government, Trinity government, which, I mean, Trinity is an incredibly small county populace-wise, but incredibly large geographically. And then you've got, you know, federal forces involved and, you know, all the state resources coming. How difficult is it to manage and connect those small communities and, like, break through some of those difficult communications? Like, no, you need to let the government people on your property, even though you were shooting their helicopters down or your grandparents were 50 years ago. How does that dialogue go from a government to community kind of outreach? Because it seems like Board of Supervisors, you guys are the conduit for that in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it challenging, you know, because there's definitely a traditional resentment towards government authority, government control. A lot of people feel, you know, the Forest Service can allow their fires to burn onto their property, but if it was vice versa, we would become fully liable. You know, you could go to jail or something if you caused that kind of fire. And so that's just a couple of different ways of looking at it. But really, you know, you have to look at what are the viable solutions if you want that, if that's what you want. And like I said before, a lot of people chose to live in the middle of nowhere. And so it is this give and take of, you know, if you have 150, 300 feet of clearings around your structures will probably be fine. And so there are ways of preparing your home and your property for worst case scenario where you don't have to, you know, you're there, you can say, my house is probably not going to burn down. This is going to be bad, and my property might burn up around it, but maybe my house won't burn up. A lot of the times, CAL FIRE is within the jurisdiction where the parcels are a lot smaller, and it's a neighborhood, and I think it's called the Wildland Urban Interface Zone. And that's where CAL FIRE will come in and help protect. And CAL FIRE usually has, since it's just California resources, they have the ability to pull resources much faster because they come from within California, whereas Forest Service has their regional locations and their stations, but when a big event happens, they have to pull them from out of state. And so that's a lot of the lag time, I think. Yeah. So it's challenging. And the Board of Supervisors wanted to send a letter this year to Forest Service, the head of Forest Service, in Washington, D.C., saying, you know, we feel that this fire was mismanaged. It was mostly in regards to the river fire or the river complex fire. There was some miscommunication, actually, between the river and the river complex. And just that caused a lot of problems for the county to get resource allocations because another whole, like, the impact on the county government is when these emergencies happen, people have to work overtime. And typically rural counties don't have extra money in their budget or extra money in their county coffer, their general fund dollars, so to pay out for all this overtime. So it exceeds the predictions of what was budgeted for. And so after an event hits a certain tier of expense coverage, the county can apply for assistance. So you get reimbursement. And you'll either get reimbursement from the state or reimbursement from the feds. But just because there was a discrepancy in the name of river or river complex, it made weeks of confusion, at least from my perspective. And it was just this little detail. Some of it, I think, stems because there's so many agencies involved. It's not like the one government and then Trinity County. You have, like, operations of emergency services for the state. You have Forest Service. You have CAL FIRE. And then Forest Service hires out to all these private contractors to assist with different levels. They take on an incident management team, which then oversees the whole thing. And then 2 weeks later, they switch to a different incident management team. So you get all these moving components and the fires moving the whole time. And this is just Trinity County and two fires. Yeah, California had over 4,000 fires this year. And so it's like the bigger picture is important to look at because, at least for myself, as a supervisor and as an affected landowner, it brings a little more compassion to Forest Service or to the person that's trying to decide where to put those resources. I'm sure it's not an easy decision. It's already understaffed. It's already underfunded. A lot of people don't get paid what they should be getting paid in those positions. And so I think it's important to have some compassion for that and to take pride in the self-responsibility, being prepared as a private landowner that, okay, if I have to evacuate because this fire is totally out of control, my house is going to be okay, most likely. Or my animals are gone because I evacuated a week ago when the sheriff told me to. That's another challenging part is if when these evacuation orders go into play and a lot of people choose to stay, that's traditionally what's happened, but it does make for jeopardizing situations where you choose to stay, you've been told to leave, and then all of a sudden you're panicking because your access that you thought was safe is totally on fire. And so you're calling and saying, help me, help me, help me. And then you're like, well, we can't really help you because we can't jeopardize our personnel, things like that.
We tried to help you and you passed up on the opportunity to accept that help.
And there's not necessarily like a liability waiver where you're like, I accept all responsibility for my outcome. But that's essentially what you're doing when you don't evacuate.
That makes sense.
And that makes it challenging for them to do their job. But, you know, there's a level of distrust to some of the policy, and especially regarding back burning. There's been a history of that, and even a lot of new kind of whistleblower articles, even on the Monument Fire. There's some articles that I was reading that are definitely questioning the policies around back burning and when it should and shouldn't be used, and who's really deciding, you know, when to pull the trigger on those backburns.
And who's responsible if it goes awry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, that's kind of one of the hurdles, I think, in government and these things, is that the liability is such a big part of the decision-making process, but it's just the way it is.
Well, and
everybody, that's why we need to encourage people to become a part of volunteer fire departments and find the resources to get the equipment there.
I heard a good story about in the good old days when there was a fire in Trinity County, everyone would just go to the bar and grab everybody from the bar and head out to the fire to go put it out.
You know, I'm 51 years old and I've never seen a fire like anything like this in Trinity County. I mean, the Helena fires, like, that was the most that I've seen. And I've never seen Burnt Ranch. The slides one year did us, like, put us, but that was only because we were isolated for so long, but that place has been very protected, and seeing Ironside on fire like that, especially because it's such a spiritual mountain for the tribe that was there, and that was the most apocalyptic event I've ever seen.
When I saw the footage of that it really hit home, because it was like, yeah, that's a landmark that everybody going in and out the 299, you see, and you know, it's one of the most beautiful stretches of road in the country, and to see what was actually happening there, that was really impactful for me too. And so one of the most important things that I want to talk about today is mobilizing community in the aftermath, which is what you're doing in a really unique and positive way. And I think these type of actions need to be models for how we react as a greater community, as a state, as a nation, to working together to bring relief. Because you're saying, you know, 15 homes burned, well, whatever, what other structures?
50, I think, in Coffee Creek, wasn't it?
30 homes in Coffee Creek.
And then how many in Del Loma?
Wow. It was 15 homes.
They're in Del Loma, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a lot of homes, but that's not counting, like, outbuildings, greenhouses, agricultural setups, these, you know, people
water
that
water systems. Junction City pretty much lost their water system.
Which is so catastrophic on such a large level and takes so much to rebuild. I think people that haven't lived in a community like this have no idea how insane it is to have the infrastructure that you have in a community in town compared to what you have to do to build every tiny shred of infrastructure on a ranch. Like, every single plant that gets a drip emitter, that's infrastructure, that's time, that's a huge amount of effort. The amount of infrastructure represented in a two-car garage with tools is just insane when you consider walking onto a 40, 80, 160 acre parcel and you're going to build a homestead from what you have in your truck.
And then whole communities around that.
Exactly. So like, how do we get these communities that are bootstrap communities that don't have a lot of extra money in the general funds in the county or perhaps even in their communities? How do we find a way to facilitate them building back?
Well, I think Jeremy mentioned a lot of agencies that hope there'll be, there's grants, you know, that Jeremy's helping his community apply for and utilize. And then for the Humboldt Grace Foundation, we knew as we were watching all of this that we couldn't do anything now. Like, we weren't going to, you know, mobilize people out there to, well, actually we did have a bunch of growers in Southern Humboldt that wanted to come to Burt Ranch and help you. But again, that's not such a great idea. But it was like, for me, it was like, okay, let's think about this. Well, you got to rebuild. How are they going to recover? And because of my spinal cord injury and a little bit of the experience I told you of why I love this place so much, healing. And what I see in the cannabis industry is trauma, and we need healing and utilizing the greater cannabis industry that's benefiting so much off of this culture and these communities that are so living by those values. Let's give them an opportunity to help empower these communities. And so I think by putting all the art, you know, things we use, places we go to, we're one, sharing our culture and educating on different parts of this. And two, we're giving big MSOs across the nation an opportunity to support these legacy players that have been the reason that we have this industry. But it's not just the legacy players, because this is not for cannabis growers. This is for landowners, homesteaders, small business owners, small farmers, and organizations. It's for the community. Someone accused me of being special interest because I was cannabis. And I said, no, I am community. I just come from a cannabis community. I can't help that. You know, that's part of who I am. That's part of what our experience is.
And it's something that I think people that don't have an experience, like the Emerald Triangle is a very unique slice of the world, so people have a hard time identifying with that. Like, oh no, most of the community has some role. Either they're making a product that sells into the cannabis community, they've got a store that sells supplies that people use for their farms, and it's not just cannabis farms, but there's a lot of them. And it's, you know, the feed for the animals that go into the permaculture living mm-hmm. soil farms that are going up here. There's so many different ancillary businesses that interact with the community in those ways, whether they believe in, want to support, want to play a role, want to be involved or not, they are because of where they're located in the community around them. And I don't think that makes anybody special interest. It makes them, like you said, a part of their community and what goes on around them.
Yeah. And timber, cannabis, the tribes, art, and music, and our nature are all parts of that community. And the cannabis community is a part of all of that. You know, it is all very, we're just as we've been talking about how these communities supported themselves through this, you know, that's what we are in Humboldt County, in Trinity County, in the Emerald Triangle, because when you live so isolated and the roads close, you have no choice but to go, hey, neighbor, help me out, man. Give me a hand. That's all you got is the guy next to you. And we've kind of forgotten about that a little bit. And for me, watching Jeremy and Duncan, watching all these folks just like bring it, was this amazing inspiration. And I think we can all take inspiration from that and remind ourselves that, you know, maybe this legalization process is really difficult and scary and we're getting shut out and all these things. But when we come together and we work together, you know, we figure it out. And we have over and over again, you know, if you look at all the different industries we've been through in this community, that's what we do. We figure it out. So tell
us a little bit about how this Humboldt Grace Fire Recovery Project is actually working. It's a system of auctions.
It's an online
vouchers,
auction.
Right?
Mm-hmm. It's an online auction, and we're going to have a raffle too, because we've been donated some items like a water tank from Daisy's Supply and a generator from Daisy's Supply, and some nutrient companies have donated large amounts. And those really aren't like art and like something somebody in New York would want to buy, right? But they're of high value to like Junction City. They need a water tank, a generator. But we don't want to auction off that. We want to make that available. So we're going to do the raffles with those items that we're going to do next month around the Emerald Cup. But the auction items, they're online. Anybody can sign up and bid at www.humboldtgrace.org, and then you go to the Fire Recovery Project, and it'll take you into the auction. And then once we close the auction on December 15th, then we're going to use those funds and go to building supply, agricultural supply, water supply, emergency supply companies. It really depends what each community needs. And then we're going to find those sources and purchase vouchers. So then those folks can go in and get water tanks or get soil. You know, what is it they need so they can rebuild next year? You know, and that could be anything. We were talking about, you know, the volunteer fire departments. They'll be able, you know, we can go to a volunteer fire department and go, you know, what is it that you need? And we can't give them the money because we're not a charitable foundation, but we can purchase a voucher through that business, and then they can go and get the backhoe or the shredder or whatever that is that they need.
Wow. That's a really unique kind of community mobilization, and you're taking a unique avenue to provide it directly to the victims, and you're also channeling the support of the communities who are coming to the Grace Project to participate in the raffles and participate in the auctions. So people can get involved by going to these sites, spending money on things they're going to spend money on anyway, and contributing to the community.
And you don't even have to spend money, because not everybody's doing very well right now. It's a very hard time. If you want to support, we've created what I call a social media street team. And you can just fill out the form. If you have a business, give me your logo, and we'll include you in the supporters, and then we'll send you the assets, and you support us on your social media. And then by that, you're showing, helping drive people to the auction, and hopefully they'll be able to participate. So really, you know, I like to create butterfly effects. You know, you can't do everything, but you can create more things to do things. And so, you know, we want to, you know, like those guys from Australia, you know, they love the Emerald Triangle. To them, it's this whole mystical, magical place. And, you know, how can everyone give? Because that's what makes people feel good. And I think that's what true empowerment is allowing people to empower themselves, really. And this project, everyone can help. There's even me, someone with a spinal cord injury that can't go run up a mountain. You know, anyone can help with this project.
That's what really spoke to me when I got the phone call via my role at Royal Gold from you saying, hey, we've got this project and we'd love to get you involved, and these are the ways you can help. I'm busy, I have a family, I have a full-time job, I'm, you know, 45 minutes to an hour plus from, you know, from most of the most impacted zones, but I absolutely want to help, and so many people I know want to help, but just don't have quite the resources or angles in to do it the way they want, or even know how to contribute in a beneficial way. And so now you've got this kind of portal for anyone on the planet to come in and say, hey,
yeah,
I traveled through Humboldt and rafted down the Trinity River 15 years ago. It's terrible what happened. Let's contribute here. And again, I think that's a good model for people across the state and the nation to like look at, all right, how do we mobilize the greater community that recognizes our role in the world to come together and make it better? And I have to say, I think we'd be a little remiss if we didn't talk about the process of building back in a more effective way, in a more sustainable way, in the face of all these fires that are most definitely fueled by climate change and human interaction with the land and decades of mismanagement of fires and forests and rivers. So how do we channel these tools and resources into a community like Trinity County and get some impact? Say, hey, we want you to build back, but like, let's bury the water lines a little deeper. Let's find ways to protect your water system. Let's put in hugel beds and water sinks and ways to trap and sink and collect the water so your ground is more moist when the fire comes in, so it doesn't spread so quickly. And, you know, is that outlandish to try and get people to do that?
I want to answer that. So whenever you do a project of any sort, I think it's really important to know what your values are. And so for me, there's, and it's why our tagline for Humboldt Grace is the plants, values, love, and grace. Those are the core values. And what does that mean? That means we're not causing any harm. You know, that means that we're being considerate, empathetic, and compassionate to the situation. It means we're creating goodness. And so every time as an organization we make a decision, it's in that moment. And everyone on my team knows that that's the rule. And do you ask yourself, am I doing harm? Am I creating goodness? What is that butterfly effect? And so with fires and funding in these communities, and when as individuals or organizations or businesses, we're looking at what do we do, where do we go with our money, it's what are those values, and then feed it back into other organizations that have those same values and other businesses that have those same values. And then all of a sudden you have this organic coalition like the Redwoods, and we're feeding each other. And then all of a sudden you have this truly sustainable network, because when one pillar falls, you have another pillar until that pillar can come back up. One of my favorite stories to tell is when I was developing my permits and talking to building companies. I was working with a local building company, and they said to me, "You cannabis folks, you guys just don't understand, do you?" And I go, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "You guys just like all fight each other and talk bad about each other." And he goes, "Do you know that if..." And I won't mention the names. "If those guys weren't in business, I wouldn't be in business." And I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "If their loader breaks, they call us to borrow our loader. If our loader breaks, we call them, because it could take 3 weeks to get that part. And we support each other. And that's how we thrive. And that's why we're so big and powerful, is because we work together." And they're very big development companies that you would think would be in total competition of each other, but they're not. They support each other. They have drinks together after work, you know? And we need to come back to that. And that's sustainable. That's what sustainability is. If you look at how nature works, it's that intercollaborative, cooperative network. And that's how we were built in these communities in the Emerald Triangle.
And I love that. I think it really is just another great extension of our community and another good opportunity to bring more people that may feel a part of the community or apart from the community out in these hills and say, "Hey, we're all here. Let's work together, because your neighbors aren't going to come to help you if you didn't come to help them." You know, when the fire's knocking at your door, you need somebody to call. And when the fire's knocking on your neighbor's door, you better hope they call you so you can be there for them as well. And it's really a scary thing to think about that this is going to be an increasing part of life in Northern California. So thank you so much for joining us and talking about your role in Trinity County and kind of bridging the gap between the people and being a part of the government, you know, the people's government and interacting with the state and the federal agencies that a lot of people are so afraid of, and being that bridge to solution and resources. We really appreciate that, Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Yes,
yeah.
We do.
There are a lot of grants out there through different agencies and different nonprofits across the whole state or across the country that do assistance in things like water district development, where a neighborhood can come together and pull resources to put in a water system for, you know, whether it's rainwater collection or water for fire emergencies, things like that. There are a lot of avenues out there, and a lot of these grants can utilize what's called match funding, where you can go to one of those grant applications and say, you know what, we have $200,000 of our own money and we're looking to match it. And they'll say, oh, awesome, we're going to match that and meet you halfway with that. And then you can even take that match and then go to someone else and say, hey, look, we have $400,000, will you match it? And you can kind of take that and... not like a pyramid scheme or whatever, but you can shop it around.
And double down.
As a community builder, yeah, let's make it work.
A lot of these grants, they like as many agencies involved. It looks really good. It's a nice way of showing the investors of those grants, whether it's tax dollars or the people that supported the initiatives to allocate those tax dollars to those programs. You know, certain senators, assemblymen, whatever it is, legislators, they're the ones advocating for a lot of tax dollars to go into these programs. And I think it's been challenging for the cannabis industry to kind of merge into that. But I think that is the method to do it, was in the form of a water district, or in the form of fire safety suppression prevention, things like that. And you can still be, you know, some kind of alliance or some kind of group or some kind of what's the other one, like a neighborhood roads group
association.
Or whatever. Yeah, neighborhood association. There's ways of having those types of entities in which you can form a plan and apply for a grant with. That doesn't have to be solely under the guise of cannabis. And by doing that, and you know, I think it is better for groups to do it, but there's also grants out there that are just for individuals and single landowners. The challenge is building that trust and making the education that those programs are available. But since they are state and federal agencies, that can be intimidating for some landowners to take on. But they're out there. And when the dollars aren't utilized and applied for, and then we lose those allocations for the different regions, whether it's based on the county border or not, every region and sub-region gets a certain amount of monies for these programs. And if they don't get utilized, then they get pulled and put into other places. So it's good to try to advocate to utilize all those opportunities and expand the desire for more of them.
Yeah. So a long and short of that in a lot of ways is get involved, get out and talk to your neighbors, go to your local, you know, city council, county board of supervisors, go to the meetings and talk to people and ask what other people know is available. Get involved. And that's one thing that's super, you know, motivating and inspiring about you being involved on the board of supervisors out there in Trinity County. It's like, yeah, you saw a need for voices and you stepped up to the plate. And that's one thing we talk about a lot of times on Royal Grown Radio, especially in communities that are just now evolving into, you know, medical or recreational cannabis communities. It's like, hey, get these heritage voices involved where you can so that there's a balance in the voices that are being presented at the table and a better way to community pool your resources and not let those dollars that are out there to benefit us go to waste. Mm.
Yeah, your local fire safe council. That's a good one to start with, because
okay,
A lot of communities have a fire safe council. Willow Creek has a fire safe council, and that jurisdiction extends into Burnt Ranch. And then, you know, Weaverville has a fire safe council. And those are a lot of the mechanisms of bringing in that funding. That's one mechanism of it. Volunteer fire departments, joining those, that is a very beneficial thing. A lot of the people that have been, you know, on those volunteer fire departments in Trinity County and Humboldt County have been there for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years or more. And I think they're definitely looking for the younger generation to step up and fill the shoes of some of those roles because they're understaffed. And a lot of it is, you know, responding to accidents on the highway and having to deal with some intimidating things, you know, fires being one of them. But the need is definitely there to sign up.
Yeah, when I grew up, everybody, well, not, and I hate to say this because I'm such a thing for women, but all the men were a part of the volunteer fire department. It was just like, that was just like, hey, you live up here, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. And I think it needs to be that way again. I heard Basha said that they got 22 new recruits for the Willow Creek Fire Department, which is the most they've had in years. And Duncan said, you know, I think Duncan's been doing pretty good at the Grange out there already, but I think this is going to help the cannabis community see that those opportunities are for them too. You know, we're a part of the community too. And so it's safe for us, especially now, to go and be a part of the volunteer fire department. You know, it's safe for us to go and be a part of commissions and boards and, you know, be community leaders. And we only help each other more as we get more engaged.
I love that. And I love the push for getting some new young blood in there to, you know, help carry on the traditions, but also to learn from these people that have been doing it for 30 years and know these mountains and communities inside and out and know where the winds are going to pick up and when the winds are going to pick up. And oh, hey, look out for this valley. If the fire crosses over here, the winds whip through that valley at 4 o'clock. You're going to have a more rapid spread. Be prepared. Protect this ridge. You know, those are things that only those old timers can share because they've lived it. So I think it's important to get out there and get involved and get that handed down wisdom. Mm. Being active and participating in your local community and ways to help and get involved and channel the energy we all have for benefiting our communities.
We're going to empower people to want to be in the community.
Lovely. So thank you all for joining us. We've had a wonderful conversation. We hope you come back another time.
Thank you so much. And thank you for this show, because you are getting to show a lot of our amazing people in this community.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hey, this is Lelania with the Humboldt Grace Foundation and the Humboldt Grace Fire Recovery Project. And I just want to give a shout out to Royal Grown Radio, and thanks a lot for being so community-minded and showing the beauty of our community.
Appreciating my time here with Royal Grown Radio. Thank you.